I'm on the phone, actually I'm on Zoom, with Aaron from my home state of Maine. Thank you for doing this interview, Aaron.
Absolutely. Glad to.
Okay, so obviously when I haven't done an interview like this for a long time, but your story was very compelling and I'm sure that a lot of people can benefit from it. So to begin with, can you describe the situation with your daughter when you contacted me in April of 2019?
Sure. So my daughter, Bailey, we had noticed pretty early on when she was around preschool age that we had some different family members come into the house that weren't really ones we had seen frequently. And we'd noticed then that she wasn't talking with them. She was interacting with them, but wasn't talking with them. Up until that point, really, she hadn't been in any kind of daycare situation. She had been with our family, my husband, our children, and grandparents primarily. So it was kind of new people in the picture at that time, and just thought it was a little peculiar that she wouldn't speak to them, but just put it off as regular shyness. My other two children were shy by nature, so it didn't really strike us as something to be overly concerned about. But going forward, when she started pre-K, same scenario, being around new children, new teachers. She was very clingy to the teachers, but would not talk to them at all, would not talk to any of the other kids. And we got through the whole year like that, thinking, well, she's just shy. She'll grow out of it. Then comes kindergarten. Situation is exactly the same. She's getting a little more interactive with the other kids. She does participate with them on the playground. She seems to have made some friends, but she's not talking to them, and none of the teachers can get her to talk. And then out in the community and just anybody coming into our home or any other people, like I said, other than the immediate family members.
So how is this impacting you?
It became more and more stressful. It became more and more worrisome to the point where we were just thinking, maybe she isn't going to grow out of this. This is not the normal shyness that I'm used to with my other two kids. Maybe we should be worried. And, you know, like I said, we got through kindergarten year and nothing changed. So we did get concerned enough to start looking for some help. We had found a traditional therapist that saw children with anxiety issues, did some play therapy sessions weekly. And we did that for about 9 months and got nowhere with that. So at that, when we decided to kind of end because we didn't feel like we were getting much help for what we should do to help her. And in the end, it was just, again, passed off as, well, she'll probably grow out of it.
Okay, so how concerned were you at this point with what was going on?
Extremely concerned. To the point of desperation where I didn't feel like I knew what to do or that anybody knew what to do. It was a terrible, terrible feeling.
Okay, and then we started working, and I explained to you up front that this is a very hard process. Think of it as CrossFit training, because a lot of it is based on paradox, which is the opposite. So we started with, how did mom and dad disagree with parenting technique and philosophy? Because it's imperative to be on the same team. Because many loving parents are not necessarily on the same team. And then what happens is that creates fragmentation, and the problem thrives on fragmented parenting. So could you enlighten the audience as to what the first stage was like?
the first stage really was, I mean, we both knew we had done several different kind of tactics, not knowing what we were doing, what was right, what was wrong. So we had both individually and collectively tried many different tactics that didn't work. So we knew we had to do whatever we were doing. It had to be consistent and the same. And she needed to know what was happening. So to communicate with her that this is the plan, this is what the new expectations are going to be, this is why we're doing this, and being consistent in all situations.
Do you remember what was the primary way that parents were disagreeing with how to handle this?
I think as far as when you came in the picture, you mean?
Yes.
I feel like we were both actually on the same page. When by the time we found you, we knew we weren't doing things correctly. But when we had her out in different situations, you know, we'd have to compare notes to make sure that we were both handling the situations the same. And that was a little difficult because when you're in a situation, it's a little unpredictable. So you really have to be disciplined in how you react. I think that was hard for both of us to come to that.
Okay, so you started slowly the process of non-enabling.
Mm-hmm.
Can you share?
Yeah, and I don't think we were so aware at the time that we were enabling other behaviors outside of talking. So it really made us take a step back to realize we were really sheltering her in other ways, and she needed to build some confidence. She wouldn't like go into the bathroom without somebody walking her in and turning the light on for her. I picked out her clothes every day without thinking twice. She really didn't have any independence with picking out her clothes, getting dressed. Even at that point, first grade, I was still doing all of that. I was setting up her toothbrush, setting up, you know, everything for her to get ready. So we just started incorporating little changes like that, having her be more independent with self-care, encouraging her to be able to go into rooms without somebody, eventually to the point where she would go upstairs to her room by herself, which was a big thing she did not want to do. So those were the little things at home we started doing. And
so when you started initiating this, which obviously is facilitating her out of her comfort zone, mm-hmm. how did she react?
She didn't like it. she would try to argue the point of especially going into rooms by herself, that she was scared and, you know, play into our emotions, which it did, of course, but she tried to resist pretty much every step of the way on that stuff. But we just kept encouraging her and little steps until she finally would accomplish it, and then really, really praise her for that.
A huge piece of treatment is parents negotiating their own feelings and anxieties mm-hmm. going through this process. And yeah. actually, that's what keeps most parents from even doing this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So when she was resisting, how did that impact you? What were you feeling, and what did you guys have to do?
When she resisted getting into the deeper part of the process, there were a lot of times where she would really break down, get emotional, and say things like, "Why am I so different? Why am I so weird?" That was devastating to hear. That was the part where you really had to go through the pain with her, but know that you were having to experience that to get to the other side. So dealing with a lot of my own guilt, fear, anxiety at the same time, that was...
What did you have to tell yourself?
I had to tell myself, my child is in pain and we need to work through this pain to get to the end result. There's no easy way to get around it. You can't go around it. You have to go through it. I just had to keep reminding myself of that.
The hardest part of everything, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, was the process of processing, mm-hmm. which is helping the child identify thoughts and feelings. Now, this is the last thing the child wants to do because it requires introspection. And by the way, this is the hardest thing for all my high-achieving executives who come to me for performance anxiety and public speaking anxiety, too, is introspection, looking into oneself, because that's where the pain and the discomfort is. Mm-hmm. But it's a powerful process. What was it like?
In the beginning, it was very difficult. We didn't get a lot of information out of her because she had been doing this for so long. It was so ingrained in her to pretty much shut down anytime she was in any situation where someone spoke to her, that to have to try to get her to talk about how she felt in those moments, it wasn't even in her vocabulary. And it brought her such discomfort that she would immediately start crying, say, "I don't know. I don't want to talk about it." To the point sometimes she would just cover her head in a blanket and go to sleep. So we had to work through that in the beginning. As time went on.
Well, I would assume, again, correct me if I'm wrong, okay, that's where the parents, that's the ultimate challenge for parents, is negotiating that pain in real time. And I think you're doing a good job of describing to the listeners here what nurturing really means. Nurturing is not rescuing. Nurturing is provide support, promote growth. It's a multidimensional concept. But, you know, I feel your emotion as you're talking about this.
Yeah, it's hard to watch your child suffer. Any parent who's been through this or has a child that's going through selective mutism, you carry that suffering with them. I mean, you really do. You would do anything to make it go away. So the processing is a lot of work. It takes a lot of time, but you will see little steps forward in time if you continue with it. And that's what we did. We kept up with the questions and trying to process situations with her. Eventually, we went from "I don't know" to actually getting some answers some of the time. And eventually, she was able to talk about it more. So I felt like it was a long process, but it was worth the work for sure.
And then we have the splinter story.
Yes.
Which I think really characterizes everything about the processing.
Yeah, I think it really summed it up better than I ever could. During one of our times where we were trying to talk to her about how she, you know, felt in situations, give us some emotions, she would try to shut us down and say, "I don't want to talk about it. You're making it worse, making me talk about it." Well, how are we making it worse? It's like I have a splinter and you're pushing on it. And I thought, that's really interesting. And I took that and used that with her and said, "I want you to think about this splinter as talking and your difficulty with talking. If we don't work to get the splinter out, this problem is not going to go away and you're going to be living with a splinter that can cause, you know, more pain for you. But you have to push on a splinter to get it to go away." And that's what we're doing when we're talking, when we're processing. we're trying to get the splinter out. So I think that was a really, it was interesting that it came from her, but we were able to turn it around and use that as a good analogy of what we were actually doing.
Again, thank you for sharing that. Okay, before we get to the medicine issue, just share, where is your daughter now? What's the present tense of the situation?
Present is amazing. Once she really just took that leap and started talking to one friend, it quickly evolved into talking to her whole class, her teachers. This all happened very, very quickly, and there really has been no looking back. She is 100% herself. The child we know at home is the child everybody knows now. She participates in class. She even initiates conversation with people, whether she knows them or she doesn't. Just anything you expect of a child who doesn't have anxiety about speaking, is that is where she's at right now.
And how is it for the parents now?
It is, the dark cloud has lifted. It was a weird thing to have a child that nobody else knew but you and a few, you know, close select people. It was always like, I was sad that nobody else got to know my child because she is such a ray of light. And now everybody gets to experience that with her. So it has changed our lives. It was a huge stress for several years that we didn't know if there was going to be a solution to. At times I had lost hope that we'd ever be on the other side of this, but we are. I can't believe it sometimes.
Thank you again. So let's end with a little clinical discussion. Okay, so what we did here was we were creating neuroplasticity for Bailey, okay? Meaning that we were getting the neurons, the brain neurons, to function more effectively by helping her identify thoughts and feelings concurrent, synergistically, to empowering her with a behavioral game plan. And we did use pharmacology to assist this process. Now, typically what happens is I'll mention the name of the drug and a person will be listening to this and they'll say, okay, so we're going to go out and we're going to get this medicine and that'll fix the problem. Okay, that, at the risk of me being too over the top, is clinically ridiculous, absurd, and stupid. Okay, because what has to happen is forces have to be done under supervision synergistically. That said, we decided to introduce Prozac. Do you remember when and why?
I'm trying to think. It probably was around 4 or 5 months into the therapy. And we had gone through much of the process of, you know, our sessions and the processing. And I felt with you that it was the next step, that you know, we were opening up her from detaching from situations more, where she could understand that this was something that she needed to work on and continue to progress. But it really felt like without a little extra tool that it was going to be a much more difficult situation. So I was all for the medication because it felt like the extra push that we might need. I could see that there was still a lot of anxiety and pain in situations. So,
okay. So what we did was we gradually went up on the medicine. We started low and then we went up. Your physician directed the process, I was suggesting. And we went up until we achieved titration, which is the therapeutic level. And then when the progress was sustained, meaning her level of confidence and her level of happiness was sustained, then we methodically went off.
Yes.
Yep. Okay. That's the way to do it. Because there's horror stories of kids on the medicine forever and not knowing what to do with it. And at this point, we're doing this interview. How long has she been off the medicine?
She has been off it for 2 solid months now.
Okay, wonderful stuff. Two more things. There was a moment where she said, all of a sudden, I don't remember where you were, but she said, it's gone.
Yes. Yeah. That was the day she started talking at school. When she came home, I mean, she cried. She was so happy. And that is what she said. It's gone. It's gone. It's like, what's gone? My anxiety is gone, she said.
Wonderful moment. Okay, now, I actually didn't really get too involved in what you did with school. I mean, I gave you suggestions and you really followed through well. So just in a nutshell, can you tell what you did?
We went to her teacher with, the information you had given us. And at that point, she was going into third grade and with a new teacher. We clued him into, you know, how the kids at school were enabling her as far as talking for her. She had been allowed to write notes in school up to that point to communicate with her friends and teachers. And we wanted the teacher to be involved in doing some of the process that we were doing at home, like freeze the moment. Because in the past, I think the teachers really didn't want to put a whole lot of pressure on her, not knowing what to do, not wanting to make her uncomfortable, but we knew that some discomfort was necessary. So he would ask her a question just like he would any other student and wait for her to answer. And when she didn't, and he would say, okay, well, next time, Bailey, and just brought her back into the class. Whereas I think before it had been, she had been pushed aside a little bit. So that was very helpful. And he made a lot of observations and gave us a weekly list of things he observed when he asked her a question, how she would react, what sometimes the other kids would do. Often they would try to answer for her. He would remind them that no, Bailey needs to answer. So he intervened in that way. So this was a good start to her third grade year, because we were at that point where we could involve the teacher more, specifically telling them what we were doing at home, and can they do that at school too.
Okay, now a very important clinical point. You integrated the strategy in school after you had done the majority of the work outside of school, the non-enabling, the processing, and the medicine was in effect when the strategy started in school and neuroplasticity was working. Okay, now this is really important, because a lot of parents see the problem as, my kid won't talk in school. Tell us immediately, what should we do in school from the get-go? And that complicates things, because it's easy to give advice in school that is not necessarily good for the mental health of the child.
Yes.
Okay, so listen. Thank you for sharing. This was great. Can you, just one final thing, what advice would you give to parents in your position?
Absolutely don't give up hope. There is hope. Trust the process. It is not easy, but it works. It really works. I didn't think we'd be where we are today. I feel like if we hadn't followed your program, that she still wouldn't be talking. I just know that. And to not give up when it gets hard. You have to go through a lot of emotions. You have to see a lot of pain But there is hope on the other side of it. So that's my advice. Just hang in there. Finish it.
Thank you. Thank you for your courage.
Thank you.
Can I ask a question? I wanted to ask her a question, if that's okay.
Yeah.
I'm an elementary school teacher.
Oh, you also. Are?
I've been working with Jonathan for about 20 years doing this. So I've heard a lot of these, and every one of them is so helpful all the time. So I've recommended a few parents, you know, Jonathan's information, but I rarely get follow through from them. I could name about 10 students. I'm a music teacher, so I see everyone in the school.
Yeah. Wow.
So we had a girl that wouldn't even speak. And, you know, everything you're saying that the teacher was doing, you know, I encourage them to not speak for them and the enabling. But my question for you is, did the teachers approach you before you acknowledged or understood there was an issue? Because a lot, you know, I'll say they don't speak, and we'll get, you know, my girlfriend's also a teacher, and you get the same thing. Well, they're just very shy.
Yeah.
And I say, okay, I know from Jonathan that it's, they're shy and there's selective mutism. So
exactly.
When you did teachers approach you for a while and you said, oh, no, and.
I think I experienced what you were just saying. They kind of felt like she'd grow out of it. She's just shy. And
did you see that, though, when they approached you? As the teacher, you know, if I say to a mother when I meet them on parent-teacher, mm-hmm. you know, she's very quiet. I have a brother and a sister. They do 3 years apart. They don't speak. They don't speak. So, and she, my girlfriend was the mother's teacher when she was in grade school, and she was the same way. So she did, I guess she thought she's grown out of it a little, so she thought that the kids would. So my question is, there's always resistance. Did you have that resistance at first?
Did I have it personally?
Yeah.
No.
You're suggesting an issue.
I felt like I was the one pursuing the issue in this situation. And I felt like more like the teachers. I mean, she went through 3 different teachers. They were open for any suggestion, but not as concerned as I was. I feel like I was looking to them for guidance at times, but I wasn't getting any.
That's great, because we have the opposite problem. That's why I was curious if there was a moment before you said, oh, I see there's a problem, where people approached you and you were kind of not ready to acknowledge the problem. And I was curious what turned you to the to that point, but you were already there. Okay.
Yeah, I can see how people would be that, but I think I was the opposite, where I'm like, I am so concerned about this that, you know, what can we do? And like I said, we tried the traditional therapy, and I thought, well, there, we're doing something. Something's going to work. We're doing something. And the teachers were like, yeah, that's great. We hope it works.
This was good. I think we can keep this in the discussion. This is good. Okay, listen.
She's in fourth grade now or third grade now?
She's in third grade now.
Okay. Yeah.